left 10. Carr jumps it in, and it's Waller. He spins into the end zone for the touchdown. Watching greatness on one end. In LeBron, there's a dude with 35 in white getting it done defensively and then offensively, taking over the fight. Mama, there goes that man.
And welcome back to this week's edition of the Waterboy Experience. I am your host, the Waterboy himself, Davis McLemore, and we have a scandalous episode this week for you. We got to talk about WWE's Royal Rumble that was presented to us this past weekend. We also got to talk about Vince McMahon's lawsuit and all the trouble he's in. We have access to all 67 pages that were submitted to the court. But before any of that, we got to get it out of the way. The NFL playoffs happened this week in a big way. The Detroit Lions lost, and here mourning the loss is my good buddy, the CEO and CFO of Nye Productions, the Red Bull chugging son of a gun, the heartbreak kid himself, Mr. Jason Shaddix. Jason, how are you feeling, buddy?
Honestly, I quite forgot about him.
There's just been so much other shit going on this week. It was easy to put it in the back of your mind.
When I was watching the Lions get pummeled by the 49ers, I wasn't even paying attention to the game. I was literally going over 67 pages worth of documents, legal documents. So it wasn't like an easy breezy read. No. It was all this, you know, lawyer talk.
Yeah, and we don't speak lawyer. I mean, we do, but we're small town bird lawyers. Simple bird law. But yeah, I mean, I was under the impression you watched the full game. You didn't?
I did, but I was kind of in and out.
Oh, so the full game was on your screen. You just didn't
pay attention to it. Yeah, I didn't pay attention much.
Well, if you didn't notice, the Lions lost.
Yeah, no fucking shit.
Just wanted to let you know. But you know what? I mean, they played that first half really great. I mean, everything was looking good. We were all hyped up. It was 21-7. We were, you know, me and you were both like, we're actually going to do this. And then everything fell apart. The wheels came off of the train and the 49ers ran away with it.
People say this was a choke. Like, we choked the lead. And just looking at the numbers, it does look like it.
But it's a choke.
If you were watching the game, like, I was watching in and out, but I was seeing them pummel the Niners at the beginning of the first half. I was like, oh, shit, there was nothing to worry about. Christian McCaffrey wasn't working like he's supposed to. Brock Purdy was, and I'm like, we got this in the bag. And it's like they were probing our defense and offense, and they were letting us have those points because the second half came, and it was a whole different ball game. Everything began to unravel. We couldn't stop Christian McCaffrey. Like, when I say half the defense was holding on to him, and that's the only way we went down, I'm not joking. At one point, like, five guys had to hold on to him so he would stop at the 5 yard.
You got to give it to CMC. He's a baller.
Yeah. So the way I look at it, it wasn't necessarily that we choked. It was more that they were letting us have our little moment while they were probing us and figuring out what they needed to do. Because afterwards, it was a fucking massacre. Like, we couldn't stop anybody and we couldn't catch. And that was another big thing. For some reason, we could not catch the fucking ball. There would have been many first downs, many touchdowns, if we would have been able to catch the ball. And a lot of people are blaming, well, you know, Dan's fault because he didn't kick the ball two times when, you know, they should have. And I'm like, I don't think that would have made a difference. If I'm going to be honest, I don't think that would have made a difference. Because the Niners offense and the Niners defense was worlds ahead.
Well,
and quite honestly, because I saw a part of the Chiefs versus the Ravens, and the Ravens were looking damn good at the first half, and then they choked. They fucking choked. Like, there's no denying that. They were choking. But based on everything I saw, the Niners are winning at the Super Bowl. The Niners are fucking winning because just how Mahomes plays, how Kelce, how everybody else on that team plays in comparison to McCaffrey, dude, they're not winning. I'm calling it right now. Patrick Mahomes is not going to walk out of there with a Super Bowl ring.
Well, the main thing that's making me agree with you is the 49ers are almost perfect. I do say
they are.
I do say almost. Now, do I think the Lions could have won that game? Yes, they very well could have. But it's
one of those things where if they could have, if the Niners were to make more mistakes. And that's what was killing us. We were making mistakes and they weren't. And they were just more athletic. I will say this. If we want to get back to the playoffs next year, we're going to need a better defense because our defense is good and our offense is good. But we need players who can stop McCaffrey, who can stop those players. Because that guy's a freak of nature.
They're the best team in the NFL right now. So if you guys want to compete next year, you have to game plan for the 49ers. Because if you could beat the 49ers, quite honestly, I think you'd beat anybody. But the main thing about it is the play calling. Now, I thought the two times that Dan Campbell went for it on fourth down, he should have just taken the kick. I thought it was unsmart and it was a little bit reckless. But at the same time, I'm like, you know, this is the playoffs. You're amped up. You know, you really want to do this. But at the same time, you know, it's a lesson learned for next year and years on. But I didn't think that was the smartest decision.
Well,
but
one of those calls.
It was gutsy. I'll give it.
It was gutsy. But one of those calls, we were at the 7-yard line. So we were right there. And yes, we could have gone for the easy field goal. But if we would have gotten the touchdown, it would have put us further ahead. But again, even if we would have gotten that touchdown, the way the Niners were playing, they would have pushed harder because I don't think they were pushing as hard as they absolutely could. And that's the thing that just scared me watching that game. Like I said, watch the first quarter and watch the third quarter. Completely different.
It's like the roles reversed.
Exactly. It's day and night. So Dan does deserve some of the blame, but it was that gutsy, that very aggressive play call style that got us here in the first place. And that's what people seem to forget. It's no, this is what got us here. Yes, it failed. Okay. We probably should have gone for those field goals and all that. But at the end of the day, I don't think we would have ever been able to beat him.
But you know, the unfortunate part is, let's say he went for him and he made him. Then all of a sudden it's a great play. It's a great idea. All this kind of stuff. It's only a good idea. It's only a good call if it works.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, it's a bad idea.
Because think about it. If he went for the field goal both times, and the second one, you know, it was a 50-50 shot of getting first down and getting the field goal.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was a 50-50 shot. But even if he would have gotten them and we would have still lost, what do you think people would have said? He should have thrown the ball instead of making those field goals, and we would have been further ahead.
The hypocrisy of NFL fans.
Yeah, it's damn if you do, damn if you don't.
I'm jealous. I'm guilty of the same exact thing, I'll admit. But let's move on to the Chiefs and the Ravens game. I saw the lesser half of it.
At the first half, because I was watching it at work when it started, Lamar Jackson, when he scored that touchdown, that I think that was their only touchdown.
I don't remember. I really don't. I zoned. Once the Chiefs took over, I really just kind of zoned out, and I knew how everything was going to go downhill.
Well, the Chiefs took over quite quick. My bad, it was 10-7, but yeah, it was their only touchdown. 17-10, so it was their only touchdown, and Lamar actually ran the ball. He's the one, he grabbed the ball, he went down to the end zone.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, fuck, the Ravens are winning. But after that, it's like, what the fuck?
Well, and the main thing that really kind of pissed me off watching it, the rain started coming down. Now, when the rain starts coming down, you don't really want to throw it. And they had been running the ball all day, doing pretty great. So as soon as the rain started coming down and they got on the field, and I was like, all right, you guys just need to run the ball, just
which
run
you
it down
can do.
Throat, which you could do easily against that Chiefs defense. The first play they do, it's a freaking pass.
Yeah, especially.
And he drops it. I'm like, fuck.
Especially because Lamar is one of those unique players where he can throw the ball and he can run the ball and he can run the ball himself. That's the big thing.
Yeah.
But what happened? And then he threw that pick.
Oh, yeah. It was awful. But look, I still have Lamar Jackson as my favorite to win MVP. I think he had a great, when you look at the regular season, even the playoffs, I think he had a great playoffs outside of this one game. And AFC Championship game, I think that's an accomplishment for them. So now we get to see two of my most hated teams in the Super Bowl in our own stadium in Las Vegas.
Well, the Raiders don't have anybody to blame but the Raiders.
And Taylor Swift in the NFL. But, you know, I can blame whoever I want for this.
We made it to the fucking playoffs. We made it to the championship game. We might have lost.
Yeah, and then you guys choked.
It wasn't a choke.
It was a choke.
No, it was a massacre. That's what it was.
That's a choke at 21-7, flip around. That's a choke if I've ever seen one.
And if it would have been the Raiders, you would have been saying the same thing
I would have said, we choked. That's what we do. That's why, like, as soon as it happened, I texted you. I was like, is this your first time? Yeah, get used to it, buddy. It's hard being an NFL fan. If you need me, I'm here. I've been through this a time or two or seven in the past 20.
No, I'd rather call Nate. His team has actually gone to the Super Bowl this century.
Yeah, but they've also choked in the Super Bowl.
No, that's what I'm talking about. They have more winning. Well, losing at a higher winning percentage. You know what I'm
losing
saying?
Losing at a higher percentage. At a higher win percentage.
Yep.
Yeah. But it's all like it's almost more heartbreaking, like if you make it that far. And then you just, like, deep down, I feel like I would rather us just go 0-16 or 0-18, whatever, however many fucking games they're playing now. I would rather us go 0-18 than make it all the way to the Super Bowl and then choke in the Super Bowl. That would be crushing.
That's true. But it's like I've been saying this entire podcast. Be happy that we had a really great season. Everything after that is just an extra, and we made it to the championship game. That's the extra. Next year, that's the goal.
Oh, yeah. Cheers to a great season from the Detroit Lions. You picked a good team.
From the Raiders.
From the Raiders. We wish we could be like you guys. Now, I do want to say, for our listeners out there who are sensitive to graphic details about sexual assault and sexual abuse and rape and all that kind of stuff, we do ask that if you are sensitive to that, then do not go any further, because our next topic is about the Vince McMahon sexual assault allegations, and we have all of the details, and they are graphic, correct?
Very much so, and yeah. I'm not going to get into the most graphic of the details, but we're going to touch on some of them.
Yeah.
So, like David said, if you're sensitive to that stuff, you might as well skip to next week's episode when it comes out, because it gets a little bit heavy, and even I had to take a breather when I was reading these.
Yeah. So, for those people, thank you guys for listening to this episode of the Waterboy Experience, and peace.
For everybody else, grab a bucket of popcorn and I don't know how to continue that.
Let's get into it.
Let's just get into it. So, not long after the explosive Netflix deal in which we saw Vince McMahon with The Rock as he rang the bell at the stock exchange in New York, an allegation came out. Well, not an allegation, but a lawsuit came out alleging that Vince McMahon, John Laurinaitis, and WWE were being sued for sexual assault and sex trafficking, as well as emotional and physical abuse by the hands of Johnny Ace and Vince McMahon. So it's a 67-page letter. It's called a legal complaint because we call it a legal, like a lawsuit, but it's a legal complaint. It hasn't been accepted by a judge if it's going to go further than this. But so far, as far as we know, Vince McMahon hasn't been served the court documents. But on Thursday, January 25th, Janelle Grant filed a lawsuit against WWE, Vince McMahon, and John Laurinaitis for physical and emotional abuse, sexual assault, and trafficking at WWE. And then it goes on to explain that in 2019, March of 2019, Miss Janelle Grant was trying to find a job. Basically, she had been her parents' sole caretaker, and her parents had died, and they kind of went into financial problems, and they ended up having to sell the house. At this point, Miss Janelle Grant wasn't employed, and she had never had a job because her full-time job was taking care of her parents. And through a friend of hers at a condo which she lived at, there lived Vince McMahon, and a friend of hers who was referred to in the legal document as resident manager, she told her, well, let me see if Mr. McMahon can give you some pointers or if he can do you a solid, maybe see if there's an opening available at WWE. So she texts Mr. McMahon. Mr. McMahon responds with, hell yeah. And then they set up a meeting. Miss Janelle goes in with resumes and all that stuff. And she said that in that first initial meeting, they really didn't talk about jobs or advice or any of that stuff. They kind of got personal, and McMahon told her about his personal life, such as his marriage was a shamble and it was just a marriage on paper. And basically it's saying that he was a lonely man and that people in the WWE and the outside world saw him as this bigger than life thing. And then he was in reality just a lonely man, just wanting attention for like by somebody. And they hugged and all that. And he said, well, I'll help you get a job in WWE. And exact words were, I'll find you a family. And he also promised her that her and the resident managers would be able to experience WrestleMania. And I think this was the WrestleMania in New Jersey, right? They did one in New Jersey before the pandemic. I know of that.
Probably. I don't know. I really wasn't watching wrestling at that point.
Fast forward, and she gets in contact with somebody in WWE. She goes in for an interview, and they basically tell her, we're trying to find a position for you. Now, note that WWE is a huge entity, a multi-billion dollar corporation that is international. And I'm guessing to do more than be a receptionist, and even then, you have to have some experience, which she didn't have. But in the end, they ended up giving her this position of director coordinator in the legal department. And she had more meetings with Mr. McMahon. At one point, she was in a meeting with Mr. McMahon at the condo. None of this is in the building. This is in his Vince McMahon's penthouse. And McMahon was in his underwear, and basically he told her, if you want the job, you're going to have sex with me. And this is when a sexual relationship between Miss Grant and McMahon started.
So in the beginning, it wasn't really anything outrageous. It was Vince McMahon gave this poor girl a job. He was very caring about her and all that kind of stuff, but it quickly became clear what he was looking for. He wasn't looking for a new employee. I mean, it was.
The thing is, what's going on here that is alleged? And let me rephrase that because let me reinforce that because we do not want to get sued for defamation or any of that stuff. But everything that we say in regards to what is going on or what we think, we're putting that with a big, this is allegedly. Yeah. We're not saying it happened, but in the case that this is all factual, every single bit of the details involved, everything we're going to say is alleged, okay?
Innocent until proven guilty.
Exactly. So with that said, what it looks like is Mr. McMahon, Vince, saw a woman who was definitely not in a good space. Her parents had died, and their home was lost to bankruptcy, and she was desperate to have a career, have a job. And I tried to do a little bit of research. I cannot confirm this with 100% certainty, but it's alleged that in 2019, Miss Janelle Grant was 38 years old, and she had never had a job. Like I said, she was her parents' sole caretaker. So what I'm imagining is that she was very desperate for an opportunity. She was like a fish with a worm at the hook, and she was seeing an opportunity for something. And she thought, this is, you know, a way for me to get by. And the hook set in and it became a lot worse. So anyway, she worked with the legal department until around 2021, in which case she was moved from the legal department to talent relations, which was at the time being headed by John Laurinaitis, who we will refer to as Johnny Ace. And at this point, throughout the 2019 and through 2021, she had been coerced by Mr. McMahon into sending him sexual videos and sexual photos of pornographic content of her. And in the longer legal document, it basically says that she was against the idea, but he told her, you want to do it, you do it. And she just went into it. And it also talks about how they would have sex and he would be very brutal with her. And at one point he stopped acting caring and more referring to her as his bitch and using other derogatory terms. Essentially, she sort of became a object for his sexual gratification. And there was this specific sexual moment where she was talked into a threesome by what the court documents referred to as a celebrity doctor or therapist or something like that. It was a celebrity doctor. And Vince McMahon and this woman and this doctor started to have a threesome, and the court document said that Ms. Janelle was pushed to lay on her back by McMahon, and he gets on top of her, kind of like squatting over her head, and he defecates on her head. And he tells her, okay, I'm going to go take a shower. You continue pleasuring my friend. Do what he wants. He comes back from the shower, and while Ms. Grant is still there with feces in her head and her hair, they continue to have the threesome for about an hour and a half more, after which the doctor left, the friend left, and McMahon basically said, we're not done, we're going to continue. And it's not known how long it continued, but throughout this entire time, she was still covered in feces, which that's one of the big things that we talked about, how this goes beyond, you know, just regular sex stuff into like, okay, this is really weird and really creepy.
Yeah. It's hard to find videos out there. I mean, it's not hard to find, but you don't see a whole lot of videos like
it's not mainstream.
It's not mainstream. But and you know, this is all not confirmed. We don't know what's going on. But if this is the case, it's
disturbing.
It makes a little bit of sense because Vince McMahon has always been into toilet humor and toilet play and all that kind of stuff, but I don't know.
This is a quote from the court documents, and it says, despite Ms. Grant's expression of unhappiness and attempt to end the sexual relationship, and while she came to understand that McMahon expected the physical relationship to continue as part of her employment, she had no idea how sordid it would become, nor how the psychological torture and physical violence would leave her feeling helpless, isolated, and trapped. And there comes to a point where she mentioned that the WWE was trying to re-sign this wrestler. And they described the wrestler as a former UFC heavyweight champion, which there's only one former UFC heavyweight champion in WWE. And it is alleged that is Brock Lesnar.
Yeah.
And then it says McMahon sent photos of her and videos of her to the superstar, and the superstar loved it. And he asked McMahon, send me a video of her urinating, just urinating, which she did and all that. And she was set to have a, and this is how the court documents called it, a play date with her, when he came down to Connecticut and talked to Vince. But Vince and him went out to dinner, and the superstar in question got really drunk, and the play date never happened because he was sent back on the plane. He was heavily intoxicated. But afterward, Vince McMahon and her were in his condo, and he said, let's role play, and he pretended to be that superstar. And they had really rough sex, in which she ended up having a lot of bleeding, a lot of damage. He would open palm slap her. And basically, she was at a point where she was yelling, stop, stop, I'm scared. And it ended with her being in a fetal position. And he said something along the lines of, I really fucked you up, huh? But because what I'm giving you right now is just bullet point, but there's more detail to this, more like, it's impressive how much detail there is available with screenshot of text messages, with dates, with all this information.
And that's the damning part, is that we have text messages.
Well, the thing is, at the moment, there's no evidence that those are Vince McMahon's text messages.
Right, but that can easily be checked.
It can be checked if whenever this goes into discovery, that's when they can ask the phone companies, okay, let us double check this, make sure that, you know, this message was sent from this phone and yada, yada, yada. So right now, we don't, like, all of this is alleged and none of this is, like, 100% proven, but if this goes any further, it can. And Vince would send pornographic images and videos of her, and he would send it to a lot of people. And it was this kind of fantasy this had, because he would say stuff like, oh, I told the tech crew about you and I showed them videos and they were all laughing and they were like, man, what I'd give to fuck this girl. And he would go on to describe, like, just imagine them all putting their cocks in your mouth and your ass and your vagina, filling you up until you couldn't. And then at one point, in a different story or moment, he talked about how he was going to fuck her up so bad that she wished he would sell her. That's one of the stuff that kind of like really stuck out to me. And she made it a point in the court documents that she was really afraid, because he was saying, hey, keep this hush hush, but he was telling everybody, and so many people in the legal department were actually starting to become aware. In fact, one of the employees who's referred to as WWE Incorporated employee number two would give her a cold shoulder and would just act like you would think a bad coworker does. But he apparently, people suspected what was going on, and she claims that people in WWE knew, including executives.
And they didn't do anything about it?
No, that's another thing. That's why WWE is part of the lawsuit, because she was also being trafficked to other people, and she was trafficked to John Laurinaitis, and McMahon told her, hey, I want you to be John Laurinaitis' breakfast. That's how he described her in those moments, as his breakfast before work.
The timeline makes sense, because do you remember when Stephanie left?
Yes, and actually that's a point I'm going to get to, where basically in, what was it, 21... or no, 22 is when this all came out, that Vince McMahon was being investigated by the board of directors. Somebody had leaked that he had paid $19 million in hush money to women. And there was this specific story about a paralegal that was going around. And nobody knew any details, but apparently her name had been leaked. But at the time, we were actually following this pretty closely. You and I didn't even know who Janelle Grant was. Like, there was no mention of her, but somehow her name did get leaked. But it's one of those things where people were like, well, I don't know who this person is. This doesn't have to do with anything, because it sounded like, well, this sounds more like a relationship that he had with a coworker, and he was still married at the time. I don't even know if he's still married, but he was still married at the time, so he couldn't get it leaked down. So he paid her off $3 million and da 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 da. And then the board of directors did an investigation on Vince McMahon for this money that was used, that was company money. And that's how he kind of got in trouble, was because he wasn't using his own personal money. He was using the company's money. So the company investigated him. And at the time, he stepped down as the chairman and CEO of WWE. And Nick Khan was named co-chairman and co-CEO alongside his daughter, Stephanie McMahon. But then Stephanie basically just said, I love my time in WWE, but I need to focus on my family. That was what she used. focus on her family. And now looking at everything, it's being said, well, did she know what was going on? And she's like, I don't want to be a fucking part of this. I'm taking a step back. I'm not going to get involved in this. And that's what people are suspecting. And Ms. Grant alleges that she was notified by somebody in the board of directors that would she be willing to be interviewed by the board. And she said, yes, she's been willing to talk about it. And in the end, they didn't even call her. And we always said that this was a sham investigation, that they weren't going to do anything. And in fact, didn't two or three board members either step down or were fired by Vince McMahon and were replaced by people who he chose?
And that's the thing, like, even if you tried to do something, it was almost like the whole thing was rigged from the start. Because at that point, Vince McMahon still had a majority ownership of the company.
He still does.
He still does to this day. He hasn't stepped down from his... Has he stepped down from the board?
I'm not sure. I know he stepped down as CEO and all that, and he won't have anything to do with WWE in its public affairs, but he still has voting power. He still holds a big stake at the company.
Yeah.
Because when he sold it to Endeavor, it's a publicly traded company, but he's the majority owner.
Right.
So he sold 25% of the shares to Endeavor and basically gave the keys to them, but he still holds a big part of the company.
So is that still going to be a problem for the WWE? Is he an obstacle anymore?
Publicly, maybe, maybe not, but because if you look at the stock, at the WWE stock, it hasn't really plummeted.
No.
And that's one of the things that I was listening to Stephen P. New, who is an attorney from West Virginia, and he was talking about this case because he's a big wrestling fan and he's involved in, you know, wrestling and stuff like that. And one of the things he mentioned is, I don't think there's going to be a lawsuit from the members of the board, because the only way that there's going to be a lawsuit against McMahon, the members of the board of Endeavor, is if the stock for WWE plummets beyond what it's worth. So if they lose billions in the next few weeks, months, then there's a chance that Endeavor might sue WWE. Because here's the thing, did Endeavor know about all these allegations? Because think about how in the court papers, it alleges that a lot of people in WWE knew, from regular employees to higher ups to executives. And they knew what was going on, that she was being used by McMahon. We don't know to what extent, but then that's then the question arises, well, did it, they tell Endeavor?
I don't think they would.
Which would hurt the sale if right. they did. Endeavor might have never bought the company. So now the question is, okay, what is going to happen with Endeavor? Because if the lawsuit goes on and McMahon loses the lawsuit, it's not just McMahon named in that lawsuit. It's also John Laurinaitis and WWE, which is owned by Endeavor. So in the case that
it loops them into it,
they have to pay stuff.
Yeah.
And then in Discovery, a lot of more stuff can come out. And here's another thing. She opened the floodgate to more women coming out, because Vince McMahon made her sign an NDA when Linda McMahon found out about the relationship. And he basically told her, well, you're going to ruin me. And if I go down, you're going to go down. Your name's going to be in the headlines and all this stuff. Basically kind of coercing her into signing an NDA by scaring her. And that's something that it alleges that in the NDA proceedings, he wouldn't let her say, okay, but I want to make sure that my name's not going to get in there. And she would make suggestions, which is normal for an NDA.
Yeah.
But there is a law out there. I can't remember what the name of the law is, but it basically says that an NDA cannot be valid if it was used to silence a crime. Sexual assault and sexual trafficking is a crime.
Yeah.
So basically, they are alleging in the papers that the NDA is voided because it should have never been signed. And another thing, Vince McMahon promised to pay her $3 million. He made the initial payment of $1 million. He broke the NDA by not giving her the other $2 million.
And we know notoriously from history, Vince McMahon He's not a good payer.
No, this isn't even, this is a factual fact.
Yeah.
Vince McMahon, when he bought the wrestling territories that were Calgary in Canada and the Los Angeles territory, he made a down payment on the territory. And then he was supposed to pay it off over time, except he didn't. And he screwed the promoters. But at that time, like, the promoters really couldn't do anything because it's breaking kayfabe and it hurts the entire business.
Right.
As well as at this point, they were like, well, you know what? I got something out of it.
Or I got out of it.
Mm-hmm. And this isn't the first time that Vince McMahon has been involved in hush money scandals. There was the
Snuka.
No.
I mean, not hush money, but, you know, covering something up.
Covering something up, but that's alleged. There's no fact to it. Stop trying to get us sued. No, but what I'm referring to is, you remember that female referee who was basically sexual assaulted by Vince McMahon, and he promised her, I'm going to give you a $500,000 contract back in the 90s or 80s. That's one of the cases. Another case was, apparently, he groped a woman at a massage place in Florida. This was around 2009, 2011. And this isn't like actually known, but there have been a lot of stories about Vince McMahon and his private jet and the meetings he would have with the divas. And I was listening to Dutch Mantel, and he did an episode on this case, and he was talking about it, and he said, look, I can't say whether or not Vince McMahon did this stuff, but to me, it sounds like, and Dutch has worked with Vince McMahon, and he talked about how the thing about Laurinaitis, he said, was when the girls would meet Laurinaitis, sometimes they would come out and they would go to a corner and they would just be very quiet and sometimes it'd be very skittish. It's like something went on. I'm not saying I know what went on, but it just something weird went on.
Right.
And Laurinaitis, again, notorious for hiring women from lingerie catalogs to be wrestler.
That's where we got the Bellas.
Yes. Which, incidentally, he married their mom.
Yeah, which is even more weird, but, you know.
Yeah, it's more weird, but there's just, like, these coincidences that throughout history, they have done. And it leads up to this point where everybody's like, okay, this does not look good.
Everything's adding up.
Exactly. Because this isn't just like, okay, oh my God, Vince McMahon, like, who could have thought he could do something like that? Like, this is an allegation, like, the first of its kind to ever come out against him. But it's not.
Story, this is the first one that has been legal and public, but if you're a wrestling fan and you know anything about Vince McMahon, you know that this is a long history of stuff like this.
Yes. And I don't really want to get into more of the gritty details just because...
Yeah, we don't have to.
You and I were going over it Saturday and it was pretty disturbing.
Yeah.
But there is more allegations of sexual assault, and Vince McMahon apparently would name dildos after wrestlers. So if it was a really big black dildo, it was named after a black wrestler. If it was a really small dildo, it was named after a really small wrestler, whether statured or like actually known that he had a small dick.
I would hate to see Andre the Giant.
Or Shorty G.
I would be very disappointed if he didn't have a dildo named Dick Murdoch. I'm just saying it. Allegedly.
Look, it might be joking around, but we're kind of doing it because this is a really heavy case. And yeah, the details involved are sickening, to say the least.
It's one of, and we have a podcast called Shattered Minds that's coming out soon, where these aren't the exact same kind of cases that we talk about. You know, mostly it's murder and
supernatural
killers.
Stuff, and it's, yeah, it's a bit of everything. And this is, let me put it like this. We have been preparing for this podcast that's coming out for a very long time, and I have done a lot of research on multiple cases. So, like we said, it's about the supernatural, it's about the paranormal, it's all this and that. But it involves also cases of serial rapists, or serial, not killers, but people who control people's mind, kind of like a cult leader, like one of those, like Charles Manson. And what I noticed was some of the tactics used by McMahon that I didn't really mention, but if you read the...
Allegedly used by McMahon.
Allegedly used by McMahon. But if you read the entire description that was set in the legal complaint, you start to notice that he started off like being open with her and being very soft, very gentle, and slowly things started to escalate. And like I said, this woman, she says that she lost everything and she was just trying to get out of this rut, and he took advantage of that. And that's something that you see a lot with cult leaders and people who, in general, just want to control people, whether, you know, they don't have to be killers, but it could be an abusive relationship, whether emotional or physical. This is the stuff. And like, there's a point where John Laurinaitis and him raped this woman in Laurinaitis' office in WWE headquarters. The next day, he sends her $15,000 in Bloomingdale gift cards.
Yeah.
Or he sends her a bouquet of flowers and stuff like that. So it's like an abusive relationship where, you know, the guy or the woman, they hit or abuse the other person, whether physically or mentally, in some kind of way. And then the next day, you know, after things cool down, they're like, oh no, baby, I promise you, I'll never do that again. But it's a vicious cycle that repeats itself. And that's what this case is. And with her specifically, she's talked about how he would use toys and basically fist her and penetrate her and all these different objects that are not meant for sexual penetration. And she said that she would be bleeding and she would be bruised and she was just going through awful things. And whenever she needed to go to a doctor, you know what Vince said? Well, I got a really good doctor and I want you to see him and don't worry about the bills. I'll take care of him. But it's kind of like he's showing her, no matter where you go, whether it's a doctor, whether it's this, whether it's that, I'm always there and I'm always controlling you and you have no way to escape.
Some of the worst qualities of a cult leader or a very controlling individual.
But yeah, honestly, that's as far as I want to go in this case. It, like I said, it is...
Yeah.
To me, the thing about this case that really just messes with me compared to the ones we're going to cover in Shattered Minds, which I know it sounds like a plug, but to me, why this is more difficult to read is because you and I grew up watching Vince McMahon on our television. Like, we know about the history of the WWE and him being almost this savior character who brings wrestling from the high school gyms into the big arenas. And he had that famous feud with Stone Cold Steve Austin, and he was this bigger than life character who we all grew up either hating and eventually loving. And you're seeing all this stuff and you're hearing that certain wrestlers who we also grew up watching are involved, and to me at least, it gives me an ick, because I'm like, this man is capable of that and he was doing that.
Yeah. And I mean, any normal human being, not saying you're a normal human being at all,
or abnormal,
but any sane person, this would disturb them. It hurts wrestling fans more, just because essentially, in a way, you trusted this guy. You grew up watching him. He gave you your childhood heroes and everything you remember from your childhood, knowing everything that fits into the timeline and where stuff happens and all that different kind of shit. It makes everything look worse, or it puts a twist on everything that you remember from watching WWE.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't even think about, you know, Brock Lesnar coming back in, you know, whatever year he did. If this is the case, if all of this is true, I can't even think about Brock Lesnar coming back in 2021 or 2022 when he did, in the same way.
No.
And I was excited about it. I was hyped.
You can't, honestly.
But holy shit.
And the thing is, though, with Brock Lesnar, if he was a superstar in question, and all facts put into that timeline make sense that he is the one that's referring
to. Matt Riddle never won a heavyweight title, did he?
No.
Okay. Then never mind. It's not Matt Riddle.
It's not. But legally talking, he didn't do anything because he never had, as far as we're aware, a relationship with that woman. As far as we're aware. Now, I might have...
But Does it mean anything to you, the fact that he was pulled from the Royal Rumble? Does that say anything?
Well, here's the thing. People thought he was going to be in the Rumble, and then he wasn't. So the real question is, was he going to be in the Rumble to begin with? Is this just a coincidence that he wasn't in there?
I don't know.
Because was it Dave Meltzer of the Wrestling Observer newsletter who said that Lesnar was replaced by Braun Breaker?
It was PWI.
I know Dave talked about it. I definitely know Dave talked about it, but I can't remember who broke the news, but that's apparently the rumor going around that it was him. And going back to Dutch Mantel, who I was listening to him last night, he said that he talked to somebody who is in the WWE. And he said, what is the mood in the locker room? And the person said, well, everybody is really just talking about, okay, how did this happen? Who knows about this? That's what they want to know. Who knew that this poor girl was being used? And it was basically saying that everybody's in shock and everybody is just, some are disillusioned. Some might be, you know, going like, oh, shit. I really hope I don't get involved in it because they might have known something.
Right. How many of them, you know, if the whole speculation, rumor of the speculation, maybe, was that he would offer her to talent.
Not only talent, but also people in the WWE. There's also a moment where he showed this to a former WWE referee, and man texted her, oh yeah, he loved it. He even left the masturbate, and McMahon just goes, like, McMahon has this cockhold fantasy of people just fucking her, and he traded her to get fucked. And here's the other thing. If he did traffic her, let's say, like, that is the correct legal term, because I'm not sure, I'm not a lawyer, but if he did traffic her and he did go say, okay, I want you to fuck this superstar, because apparently after she signed the NDA, he told her one last job, basically go to New York and fuck this guy who is going to be at some event. Then my thing is, does that mean that this not only just becomes you were trafficking her in the building in Connecticut to you're trafficking her across state lines, which makes it even worse. Worse in the punishment, I might say.
But my thinking is, you know, think about the guys who
are in the top. Because I'm sure he's not offering her, in the case that he was to wrestlers, to Shorty G.
Johnny Gargano,
or any of those people. It's the top guys that he's buddies with.
But also, do the guys in the locker room know who else in the locker room had been involved in that?
Or who even knew?
Nobody. That's the other question, is who knows?
We know people in the tech group knew because he said it to her, but who knows if those are the same guys still employed?
We know Triple H knew.
How do we know?
He's got to. I just...
Dutch Mantel...
Stephanie knew, Triple H knew.
Dutch says that when they're talking in the legal paper about corporate employee numbers, da da da, and they have like a descriptive form of, you know, what this job is. Like, we don't know what those jobs is, but because he worked in WWE in the legal, but in the business side.
Was he an agent?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So he kind of knew, and he was guessing, and so was Stephen P. knew about, this sounds like it was Kevin Dunn who was the guy that mentioned that he was a family friend and da 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 back from the Titan Days. He says, this sounds like it's Kevin Dunn. This person sounds like it's Bruce Pritchard. But it's alleged that they knew, but as far as they did something, no.
In some cases, and I'm not saying this for everybody that did know, knowing and not saying or doing anything about it is almost just as bad as doing it yourself.
It could also be a case where...
It just depends. It depends on the situation.
Well, it could also be a case where they knew, but they didn't know. Like, they knew McMahon had a relationship with her, but as far as they knew, it was probably like, oh, well, that's his new girlfriend. He's, you know, cheating on Linda because they're married. but he's cheating on Linda. They're just having an adult consensual relationship. And McMahon talks about her. They probably are into open relationship, or they're probably like very kinky or something like that. That's what I think, that some of the people who knew, they were like, okay, it's the boss fucking an employee, having a relationship with an employee. He doesn't want people to know because obviously he's married, but also it looks bad on the employee and the boss having a relationship. And then, and that's one part of the people that knew. And then there's the other part of people who knew what was going on. So there's different levels to knowing. And I think that the wrestlers, at least those who weren't at the top, I think that they might have heard rumors that Vince was seeing somebody. But like I said, I bet you they thought, well, it's probably just, you know, cheating on his wife. Because during this entire time, Linda wasn't living with him. She was down in Florida.
They've been separated. They're still married, but they've been separated for a while.
Yeah, and for a while, she was serving former President Trump as leader of a committee of small businesses, something like that. But she was in Washington dealing with legal stuff and all that stuff, and he was by himself. So, I'm guessing some people knew the reality of what was going on and kept quiet, and then there were some people who were like, oh, Vince just got himself a girlfriend.
It's just a matter of who.
Exactly.
So.
It's not a pretty case, is it?
No, it's really not. I think we took this more seriously than Cornette and Brian last.
Well,
but just like Conrad said, you know, well, they were reacting to it in actual real time. It was shocking. It was
not only that. I checked on X, formerly Twitter. I'm still calling it Twitter. Fuck X.
Yeah.
Brian said that they're gonna do another look, but they're gonna look at the 67 pages on the experience.
So tune in to. Well, we're not gonna give them a plug. What am I kidding?
We don't get paid for plugs. You only plug my shit, motherfucker.
I'll plug your shit.
That's enough plugging and just talking about stuff that is bringing down the room, because there's like a notable brought down of our enjoyment of doing this podcast and probably me editing this by now. So
is there any way we can bring this back up right before we get off? Can somebody just drop some like great news that will allow us to not end this show in such down in the dumps?
Well, there is some news.
What's that?
We're going to come out with a new podcast pretty soon.
Yeah, well, we already said that.
Well, yeah. The only thing we can end this on is next week is the Pro Bowl. Well, actually, this weekend is going to be the Pro Bowl, and we are not going to review the Pro Bowl. We are going to review the NFL's regular season, well, and some of the playoffs leading off to the Super Bowl contenders. Does that make sense?
Yeah, we're going to basically somewhat do what we did with Formula One, but...
Yeah, and then we're going to watch the Super Bowl, and then we're going to come out with our review of the Super Bowl, and then we're going to see, you know, whoever wins the Super Bowl might be the number one team, because I'm not going to give them number one or number two just simply... Because overall, if you're going to be number one or number two, you got to be in the fucking Super Bowl. That's the way I look at it.
Absolutely. But the other thing is, are we just going to look at the regular season, or are we going to look at the regular season plus the playoffs?
I did say plus the playoffs.
Yeah, you did. But I think we should just look at the regular season in a bubble by itself.
Okay. Okay, I can get down with that.
But anyways, you ready for me to sign us off?
Yeah, sign us off, because I'm feeling icky right now.
Thank you guys for listening to this episode of The Waterboy Experience. You can follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram, or TikTok at The Waterboy Pod. I don't really have anything else besides that.
Plug in the Shattered Mind.
Yeah, Shattered Minds.
We got coming. A trailer.
Shattered Minds podcast coming soon. Go check out the trailer wherever you find your favorite podcast. Thank you guys for listening to this episode of The Waterboy Experience, and peace.
Outside the 10. Hart dips it in, and it's Waller. He spins into the end zone for the touchdown. Watching greatness on one end.